Thank you for joining us for Care and Connect, an ongoing series produced by KPTZ Port Townsend that provides an in-depth look at local nonprofits and the people that keep them such an integral part of this community. I'm your host, Tim Quackenbush, and today we're speaking with Devin Carney, manager of the Humane Society Animal Shelter, and Jenny Hayes, the assistant manager. Welcome to both of you.
Hi. Hello. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here with us. Today, I would like to take a little bit of a look at the day-to-day operation of the animal shelter. Most of us, generally, when we make our way out to Critter Lane, we are there to maybe look at your animals for adoption, maybe to get a license, myriad of reasons that we might venture out there. But for most of us, it's not something we do very often. I'd like to take a look at what is involved with running the animal shelter here in Jefferson County. And I'd like to start off with, and this would be for either one of you, this is not a common profession. Then I'll start with you, Jenny. How did you come to this job?
I actually started as a volunteer. I was a volunteer dog walker. And I volunteered for that facility when I was in high school as well. It was my senior project. So I came back to the facility a decade and a half later and wanted to volunteer for them. And by then, it had very much changed and changed for the better.
And what were those changes?
The biggest change that there has been in the past 20 years in our county actually has to do with the low-income spay-neuter group in the county called Olympic Mountain Pet Pals. And that has made a drastic difference in the population of homeless animals. So when I was in high school, they were very overcrowded out there, and they were definitely having to euthanize for space on a very regular basis. And that does not happen anymore and hasn't happened probably in the past, I think, 8 years now. Since the sheriff's department took it over, that hasn't had to happen. And when I started working, it was not the Humane Society of Jefferson County yet. That had been formed, but the sheriff's department was still in charge. I started working there 5 years ago. And then when the switchover happened, because the sheriff's department just simply couldn't afford to keep the shelter running, the Humane Society took over, and they knew that I had been working there for some time and knew what I was doing, and I just sort of transferred over to the Humane Society.
So did I hear you say that there hasn't been a euthanization out there for about 8 years?
For space.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, you're quite young. When you talk about that continuum from the beginning of this program of spaying and neutering, it doesn't seem like it took that long for it to come to fruition.
I volunteered out there in 1995. For the first time when I was in high school. So,
we're talking 20 years.
Older than I look. nothing wrong with that.
Well, still, no, absolutely nothing wrong with that. And still, 20 years, I mean, when you think about the scope of the problem of animal overpopulation, just the thought that a program like that can have that impact in that amount of time is still a good thing.
That is the biggest impact that an owner actually can have on animal overpopulation within their community. And a lot of people look at the issue of animal shelters and they look at euthanasia and they're very upset by that. The biggest thing you can do as an everyday person is make sure that you get your own pets spayed and neutered so you're not contributing to the overpopulation problem. Fortunately, because of Olympic Mountain Pet Pals, we don't have that problem currently. And our shelter is able to operate right now and give these animals as long as they need to get adopted. And a lot of other areas don't have that option. They're just simply too crowded. There's just too many.
I know that when I was out there last week, I saw a lot of seemingly happy animals. Nobody was complaining to me. They all looked pretty happy and very well taken care of. Actually, a very clean and nice facility. I can imagine that the whole issue of overcrowding would play a large part in that. I wasn't there 20 years ago, but would not be the kind of place I would want to see overcrowded.
No, because we have a smaller population, we can give each animal that much more attention with our volunteers and staff too. And that includes, that's medical attention, that's toys and enrichment, and just love and attention too. When you have three times more animals, it takes that many more people to give them everything they need. And in some cases, that's quite hard. So we're very fortunate in our community.
We focus a lot on enrichment and stress reduction, keeping them happy.
And that is Devin Carney speaking. Hi, Devin. How did you come to this job?
I worked at several of the local veterinarians and knew the shelter. I've kind of always known the shelter. So when a job opportunity arose, I just joined on.
And are you happy that you did?
I am.
Now, you said that there were no animals euthanized for 8 years due to overpopulation, but I would imagine that you see some pretty sad cases come to you every now and then. And I mean, I've had animals myself that I've had to put down when they were at the point that it was not reasonable to keep them alive. Does that still happen then?
If we have a dog if the dog is really sick and it's in the animal's best interest to not be allowed to suffer, we're going to let that animal go. Or alternately, if we have an animal that's very aggressive, we have to think about our community safety, and we can't rehome that kind of animal out either.
And how do you evaluate these animals as they come in? There must be a wide spectrum when it comes to aggression, when it comes to health, when it comes to adoptability. How are these animals evaluated as they come to you? Who evaluates the personality of that animal?
I mean, we're there every day, so we interact with those animals every day.
So you know the animals that are perhaps not so good with children or like their space. There are certain animals that need to be outdoors more than others, or that may tear up your couch if left alone.
Every animal is looked at as an individual, first of all. Staff evaluates them, and we all confer too, because we all see different things. So we all make sure we're communicating. And we do have a dog trainer too. And she'll come in and she'll look at the dogs where it's not as obvious, not as clear cut, what is going on with them, or if we need a second opinion on what we think we're seeing, we'll call them in. Medical issues, obviously, we work with some of the veterinarians in the area. Padlock Vet Clinic, we're contracted with them. They see a lot of our animals. We also have a contract with Chimicum Valley and
Opa Animal Hospital.
Yeah.
We have a contract with Opa Animal
Hospital. So local. Yeah. Local veterinarian groups that will help you out with that. When you get an animal in that may originally seem aggressive or maybe not at the top of your adoptability criteria, what do you do to make that animal adoptable?
First of all, you have to look at the ways we receive animals. And sometimes we do receive strays, both from the city and the county. So homeless animals wander around seemingly with no owner. If animal control gets them, if a citizen finds them, they bring them to us. We put them on hold for 5 days. We look through our lost animal reports. They get scanned for a microchip. We wait for an owner. We try to contract an owner if we have any information like a microchip. If all of that fails, then the animal obviously is looked at for adoptability. But meanwhile, since it's been there for 5 days, that starts to give us an idea of how they are. Some of these animals, just from whatever circumstances they arrived from, may be scared. And you might get that dog that growls at you for the first 4 days and kind of doesn't want anything to do with you. Typically, in cases like that, we give them a little bit of extra time. We're gentle. We're patient. We respect their space. And we see if that's going to turn around. And lots of times it does. So it's just about respecting the animal, respecting their boundaries, and trying to make yourself a good person for them to be around. For instance, if you go back there and leave a little piece of hot dog for them, and then you just go away, they learn that when you come around, you're coming around and delivering wonderful things. And that does a lot to build trust.
You know, I'm the same way when it comes to hot dogs. Anyone that gives me a hot dog is instantly my friend. So
yeah.
That makes perfect sense to me. Are there techniques in dealing with these animals, whether it's a cat or a dog, that you have learned or that you know that people like myself that are not in this business would not necessarily know? I mean, if a dog is fearful or aggressive, are there certain techniques that you've learned in your time at the shelter?
Definitely.
Space.
A lot of people are tempted with any dog, including a strange dog, to get right up to the dog, bend over, and look them right in the eye. That's actually can be quite threatening, especially for a fearful dog. So that's something that we don't do as staff, and we try to teach the volunteers not to do that too. We call that hovering or looming. Instead, what you want to do is kind of stand sideways. We basically all learned body language. We just respect the dog's body language. If they're looking uncomfortable, if they're looking like they need space, we give them space. If they're looking like they might want more attention from us, we give them more attention. So we're really wiggly on, it's just all based on the animal and what the animal needs.
That sounds like a big investment of time.
Yeah.
Are there, and this question is for either of you, are there any animals that particularly stick out in your mind in the time that you've been doing this for whatever reason, whether it's because it did not end well for them, maybe you were just so thrilled that they were able to be correctly adopted. Is there anything that any one of those, the animals that you've dealt with, that kind of rises to the top?
For me, we recently had a beagle that was very, very, very fearful, and we did quite a bit of work with her, but in the shelter environment, we truly could only get her so far, and we looked into some different rescues, and we were able to find a rescue placement for her. We sent that dog down to Portland and got her placed with a beagle rescue in Portland, and she actually got adopted very quickly after we got her placed, but she was not... This was a particular dog that was not going to thrive in the shelter environment, so what we were able to do for her was to get her into a different type of environment that was set up to work with fearful dogs like that. And actually, the group that we sent her to, she was so fearful, they suspected that she may have been a dog from a laboratory with no human contact.
Really?
So she ended up going to a foster home situation, and I believe her foster home people
ended up adopting her,
yes. They were experienced in working with fearful dogs, too. So
that is a big responsibility, taking on an animal that has been traumatized or has these sort of personalities that would be difficult to live in human society as we know it.
And to go into it knowing that you may not even be able to touch this dog for a year or two. It takes a lot of commitment.
That dog was actually turned in for being fearful. A man got her from someone else, and he couldn't even touch the dog. So he turned her over to us because she ran from him. So it wasn't just that she was fearful in the shelter environment. She was just a fearful dog.
Is that common that people will turn dogs in that they just know they're not equipped to deal with? Or cats also. What are the top reasons that people... an animal would come to you?
Surprisingly, moving is still a big one.
Moving?
Mm-hmm. Many people are people going to college, people moving to a different situation, can't afford a pet deposit. But moving continues to be one of the main reasons that we get pets turned in.
There's also finances, too. I mean, the economy has gotten better, but there are still some people out there that the dog, the cat, will come up with maybe a medical issue that might be an easy thing for someone to deal with, but for certain people, they can't afford to get their old cat a dental or deal
keep
with their dog's
prescription diet,
right? Or keep their dog on flea medication, and their dog has flea allergies, so they're itching themselves raw. So we still see a lot of that, where people just simply can't afford to give them what they need, so they have to give them up. It's kind of sad.
Well, I would understand that when we see a puppy or a kitten, it's just very hard to resist sometimes. And I remember driving down a road in the middle of nowhere in Arizona and coming across a exotic bird rescue. And one of the things I learned there is that people will get a parrot or a macaw without realizing that their lifespan was longer than the human. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these birds came to them because the owners simply passed on, and this animal may have another 30 years left. So it's important, I suppose, as a prospective animal owners, that we look at all aspects of having that animal and how really it does involve a certain amount of sacrifice.
Absolutely.
And speaking of that, do you ever receive exotic animals? I know you're dogs and cats, but...
Our shelter is not equipped to handle exotic animals.
Well,
so
Or contracted. And the building just simply at this point is too small. There's no areas to safely house exotics. So
yeah. We can take dogs and cats. That's what we're equipped for. People with exotic animals, we do refer them to Center Valley Animal Rescue or...
But sometimes we do get surprises occasionally when we show up to work. Our shelter is gated. When we're not there, the gate is locked. And sometimes in the morning you will show up and there will be a box or a cage or something outside the gate. And it wasn't that long ago that... Was it you, Devin, that showed up to the bunny?
Yes. Actually, that was after we were already open. Okay. Our volunteers had come in. We'd done our morning chores. And as the morning volunteers were leaving, they came across a rabbit at the gate. This particular rabbit had been turned away by a couple other rescue groups that had been full. So the person who owned the rabbit dropped it off at our gate. And I contacted one of said rescue groups because we are not equipped to house rabbits. And they recognized it and they did take it. To help us out, and they were able to rehome it, but we are not able to take rabbits.
No, I could understand that, and I would think that simply leaving something at your gate is like leaving a coyote food. I mean, essentially.
Yeah, it can be.
There's lots of things that get left at the gate. There was also, I believe it was last spring, another employee showed up to work to a box full of baby raccoons at the gate. And again, we're not contracted to deal with wildlife, and you have to be contracted with Fish and Wildlife actually to deal with wildlife. So we ended up giving those guys to Center Valley because they can handle wildlife. But that was a very, you know, quick get them moved on because they needed to be bottle fed and kept warm. And
we didn't know how long they had been out there, when the last time they had been fed was. And that can be pretty important with little baby animals like that.
I can imagine. Well, a big thank you to Center Valley for providing that service. Personally, I'm a big fan of dogs and cats. I don't think there could be any more perfect pet than a dog or a cat. They've been domesticated for thousands of years.
Yeah.
If they're not our friends, they sure know how to act like they are, except for the cats. I'm talking about dogs here. Cats have their own wonderful attributes also. I have two of them, but they are certainly different. So, I'm not a big fan of having exotic pets, and there are plenty of dogs and cats in this world and people like yourself that are out there providing the service to get them back into homes. And that's another thing that I've noticed over the years. Maybe it's just me, but it seems that it was much more common for people and families to buy pets at pet stores. I mean, I remember a time when you'd go to any large mall in any large city and there would be a pet store in there. And I know it exists, but it seems that people are more sensitive to the number of animals that are out there needing families.
They're starting to look at where those pet store puppies and kittens come from, too. And they're starting to look at the conditions that those animals are housed in before they make it to the pet store. And people are not liking what they see, and rightfully so.
Right.
They're and becoming so more family members than
yes,
family accessories.
Yes. I know that there are certain animals that go through that accessory fad. Mm-hmm. For a while, there was Chihuahuas. Have you seen any spikes, any ups and downs in certain breeds lately?
No. Around here, it's pretty random what we get. Mm-hmm. We never know what's coming. There will be strange trends sometimes. Like, we'll have one black cat, and then we get four more black cats in. Or all of a sudden, we have
11
nothing.
Orange kittens.
Or nothing but tabby cats. So things like that happen. But it is totally random. It's just things tend to cycle for whatever reason.
Well, good. What's your population out there right now? What types of dogs and cats do you have?
So
there's three cats right now.
Yes, we were actually just discussing this. It seems like in the past 5 years, one trend I've noticed is, it's kind of funny. It seems like either we are low on population of cats and high on dogs, or high on cats and low on dogs. So we just had a bunch of cats, and almost no adoptable dogs. And now it's switched. So we only have 3 adoptable cats currently, correct? Mm-hmm. And how many dogs, Devin?
7 to 9.
So, well, hoping the best that you find owners for them. So anyone out there, this is an insider tip from KPTZ. If you're looking for a dog, this is the time to do it. Cats, not so much. And that can turn around at any time. So this is the time to go out and get yourself a little dog or even a big dog, right? Is there anything about your job, the job that you do, both of you do out there, that keeps you up at night?
I mean, there certainly are days. I mean, when you have a dog whose adoptability is questionable and you need to stop and set back and look at what is best for the dog and not what makes you feel best about the dog. On occasion.
Well, I've had nights where I dream about nothing but kittens, too, in the height of kitten season when you're swimming and, like, 30 kittens that are wandering around out there in foster homes and more are on the way, and you're like, where am I going to put them? All my foster homes are full. Then I go home and I'll have dreams where I'm drowning in kittens.
There will be nights sometimes where if it's really cold and really stormy, every once in a while if the weather's really bad, I'll make a trip out there and go check on them just because I feel like I have to.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's an image that should haunt your dreams, swimming in a pool of kittens. Let's not let that happen.
I think we all feel we're still fighting that animal shelter stigma where people look at you like animals come in and they don't go out. And that's absolutely not true. These animals, as long as they're not aggressive and not horribly ill, they stay with us until they find homes. So, and we give them all the love we possibly can. So we want people to come out and look at our facility and see that it's actually a happy place for these animals, because it's kind of like a little hotel. They stay there, they get lots of love, and we find them really fabulous homes.
It's not uncommon for stray dogs that have come in several times, not uncommon for them to want to go right back to their kennel. They're happy to see us.
Or dogs that have been adopted. Frequently, adopters will come with that dog to visit staff, and some people would think going back to the shelter for that dog, they would be scared, and what we see frequently actually is the dog running up to the door, tail wagging, wanting to come in, rushing into your arms, happy to be there. And that really tells us that we're still fighting that shelter stigma where people look at you like for the animals, it's times like that when you realize that you're succeeding, that's what you're doing.
And I can vouch for that. Just when I was out there, I was happy. My tail was wagging. I like the place. Everybody's very friendly, and I didn't see an unhappy animal in there. In fact, I could imagine that it's quite a step up for many of the animals that you get.
Yeah, there are definitely animals out there where it's probably the safest place they've been in and the place where they felt the most love and warmth and regular food and toys. And yeah, definitely, yeah.
Because of our small population, too, we're able to do more for them than some other places may be able to. I mean, you know, there's quite a few dogs we've done pretty extensive dentals. We recently had a dog that needed a toe amputated.
Yes. Maybelle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybelle came in as a stray. She's a pit mountain dog mix. She's up for adoption right now. And she had a big, large scoop of flesh taken out of one of her toes. Not sure why she showed up like that. And the toe was quite infected. So she ended up needing an amputation. So she got that. She's all healed. And she is a great dog. You would think that was traumatic, you know, and then she comes into the shelter. You would think that she would be scared, or no, she's been a trooper through the whole thing. That has been a very sweet dog, always happy to see you. Great dog.
I have a pit bull mix. It's missing a leg, but is, like you said, is probably the friendliest dog I've ever had. Mm-hmm. So we never know about animals. We do know that if they're treated right and they're treated with respect like you give them out there, that they can come out and be great family pets for a very long time.
You should tell the microchips.
Microchips are either very good or very frustrating as a shelter employee, because you get that stray in and you scan it and you find a chip, and sometimes the finder is there and they go, yay, it's chipped, it's going to go home. And unfortunately, a lot of people out there forget to update their microchip information. So while it's chipped, many times the contact information isn't current. I mean, sometimes it's not even the current owner. Sometimes the information is from out of state. The phone numbers are disconnected. So it's great when you can actually get through to someone, but most of the time not. We did, a couple years ago, have an older chocolate lab come in, and he was microchipped. And we called the chip company up, gave them the chip number, and they told us the dog had been reported years before as stolen in another state. So the contact information for this man was out of date. His numbers were no good anymore because it had been years. But we did a lot of Googling, and we managed to find this man and get in touch with him. And we told him he had his dog, and he was shocked because it had been probably 4 or 5 years since he had seen his dog and reported his dog as stolen. And he got his dog back. We drove it to SeaTac Airport and put him on a plane, and that guy got his dog back after all those years. It was great.
So how do we know if the information on that chip is accurate or updated?
You can ask your veterinarian to scan your pet for a chip, or alternately, you can come into the animal shelter and we can go out to your car and scan your dog for a microchip.
That's something you would do? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful.
And registration information, you just have to remember if you move, if you change your phone number, you need to contact your microchip company. So I had cats that were microchipped, and I just made sure that that was on my moving list, was updating their chip information.
Sometimes people don't know that their pet has a microchip.
How do you know? I mean, besides scanning,
you don't, unless the pet has been scanned or it has a little tag on it that says it has a microchip. There's no way to tell.
Okay. Well, it's been interesting speaking to both of you. And again, you're tuned to KPTZ. We're speaking with Devin Carney, the manager at the Humane Society Animal Shelter on Critter Lane, and Jenny Hayes, assistant manager at the same facility. Thanks to both of you for being with me today.